Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, a Lori Vallow update. Did the court just sign an order preparing for the release of Lori Vallow? Second, every judge's and district attorney's worst nightmare. Third, a little constitutional law refresher course. And fourth, the dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already done so, please hit that little subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put out new content. And as always, leave us a comment below. We try to review them all. We try to answer as many as we can. There's just so many hours in a day. First on the docket, the Lori Vallow case update. For those of you who do not recall, Lori Vallow has her third attempt for a bond reduction on Friday. She's tried in Hawaii. She tried when she got back to Idaho. She got a little bit of a reduction, and now her attorney says that $1 million is just way too much. The district attorney says, produce the kids and we can entertain a bond reduction. To date, neither Ms. Vallow or her husband, Chad Daybell, have produced any children at all. To make things even more complex for Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell is that the Idaho Attorney General is taking over the investigation as it relates to Chad Daybell's deceased wife, Tammy, because she died unexpectedly at a very young age. No autopsy was done at the time. Her body has since been exhumed, and authorities are waiting on new lab work that was conducted after her body was exhumed. Chad Daybell has an attorney as it relates to that particular matter. As of this date, obviously no charges have been filed. Well, jumping back to Lori Vallow, the judge in this particular case, Magistrate Michelle Mallard, signed an order stating that if Lori Vallow is released, that her home address would be sealed. This order was in response to a motion filed by Lori Vallow's attorney, Mr. Mark Means, and it was a very generic motion, which basically said that he moves an order from this court, corresponding order to seal regarding defendant's residence upon release. That's it. The court order states, it is hereby ordered by this court for good cause and by the verbal stipulation of the parties that defendant's pleadings entitled notice of residential address shall be sealed. So, does Mr. Means know something that we don't? Does the court know something that we don't? Or is this just a mere formality? I personally think it is a mere formality. Mr. Means trying to say, hey, if she is in fact released, do not let everybody know the address in which she would go. Okay, fine. The court, probably going through, preparing for the hearing, says, fine, I'll sign this. This is rather perfunctory. And it's stipulated apparently by both sides, the defense and the prosecution, that her home address should not be released. However, it could give one a little pause for a second to make them think that perhaps a further bond reduction may be given, or that Lori Vallow is getting close to actually posting the bond. We will see on Friday, assuming court proceedings are not vacated. I think they're going forward, and we will see how that turns out. As a betting man, I think she stays in custody because her bond will remain at $1 million, and I think that Chad Daybell has had enough. I think the excitement, the allure of the new wife has worn off, and he is out to protect himself, and he may even want to start considering doing a proffer with the authorities if he has any information as it relates to the whereabouts of Tylee and JJ. Just a little criminal defense attorney's perspective on that. If I represented Chad Daybell, now's the time to start thinking about protecting yourself because they're coming for you. Next on the docket, every judge's and district attorney's worst nightmare. That's right. What does every judge on a criminal docket fear? It's the same thing every district attorney, elected district attorney, every line deputy district attorney fears. And that's cutting somebody a break and they go out and they commit a more serious offense like murder. And that's what happened, allegedly. A gentleman by the name of Joseph Williams was being held at the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office. And he was originally arrested for possession of heroin and drug paraphernalia. Both crimes, a bond would have been set, no greater than reasonably necessary to assure this individual's appearance at court, as well as protecting the community as one of the considerations. That's the consideration that the courts have to consider. Well, in an effort to curb the jail population of with the COVID-19 situation going on that everybody knows about, and everybody's heard about prisoners being released, minor jail sentences that for minor offenses being reduced are taking place all over the country because it's a hotbed of infestation in a jail with obviously people within close proximity. Well, in this particular case, the courts agreed, along with the district attorney, and the sheriff released Mr. Joseph Williams. A day after his release, he was arrested for murder. Now, obviously, he's given the presumption of innocence, like anyone we discuss here on Crime Talk, and that presumption continues with them until and if they are found guilty in a court of law. Apparently, according to police reports, this particular individual, Mr. Williams, who was obviously arrested previously for possession of heroin, is now charged with second-degree murder. And he's facing several charges, including resisting an officer, as well as felon in possession of a firearm, as well as possession of heroin and drug paraphernalia. One could possibly speculate that this was a drug deal gone bad, or perhaps maybe a case of self-defense where he had guns and drugs and he was defending himself from somebody trying to take his guns and drugs. Needless to say, Mr. Williams is in a hot seat, and it also makes everyone else who has legitimate concerns about their health related to their age, maybe asthma or something along those lines, makes them look like maybe we shouldn't let these people out because they could be the next Mr. Williams. There's always going to be a Mr. Williams. I personally know of a judge who took a shot on an individual, gave him probation, and within weeks, that individual had basically dragged a young lady from a street into a back alley and did terrible things to her. Every judge's worst nightmare is that they cut somebody a break thinking maybe this time will be different and that they go out and they do something more serious and, God forbid, they kill somebody. District attorneys stay up at night worrying about that as well. Somebody on that border of, do I give them a chance? Do they need to go to prison? Do I give them a chance? Do they need to go to prison? Every district attorney worries about that as well. And sometimes as defense attorneys, you have to say to the district attorney, let's give him a shot. If you think that he is going to fail or she is going to fail at probation, we'll all know rapidly. Everything in his past is that of a nonviolent offender. And if he messes it up, he will be his own judge. And sometimes as a defense attorney, you worry about setting your client up for failure when you give them an opportunity for probation and you just don't think they're going to do it. Like, why is this time going to be different? And as we have to explain to people oftentimes, past performance is indicative of future results. Now, Mr. Williams had been arrested some 35 times on various other charges. Did anybody think that he was going to get out and not continue that same pattern? People will change when they want to change. They're not going to do it if they're ordered by the courts, if they're trying to get out and making a promise. They only change if they want to. And if it's important to them, they'll make that change. If not, they'll continue doing the exact same thing. Next on the docket, a little constitutional law refresher. Now, I took a lot of heat stating that the mayor, this Mayor Fisher in Louisville, I think I got that pronounced correctly this time, Louisville, that he was probably one of the dumbest mayors in America, and his legal counsel that he was receiving probably should be disbarred for giving the advice that he could shut down a drive-through ministry that was going to take place on Easter Sunday. Well, fortunately, a United States District Court judge did that before I got the opportunity to say that that was the dumbest thing that ever took place. And that United States District Court judge says not only was that the dumbest thing, he thought it was Orwellian, but he also said it was unconstitutional. And I took a lot of heat. A lot of people said, oh my God, Scott, if it would save just one life, wouldn't it be worth it? No. If you want to remain in your house and protect yourself and think you're protecting others, go do it. I'm all for it. No one's forcing anybody to go outside, all right? But what I'm saying is, and I think people are starting to realize, these orders make no sense that are issued by mayors, that are issued by governors. They are a governor. They are a mayor. They are not king. And as you may all recall from your history lessons in American history, people in the United States came here to form the United States because they fled the king, a tyrant, who one day would say, what you're doing is now illegal and you can't do that. So we came up with this radical idea, and it was called a constitution. And we are a republic. We are a republican form of government, all right? What does that mean? It means we are not a democracy. The founding fathers specifically rejected a democracy because a democracy can impose its will upon the minority. That is mob rule. That's why they specifically said it is a representative type government. That's why we have in our states, we have an electoral college, because we don't want the majority on East Coast, on each coast, to say that this is what the policy is going to be for everyone else. That's why in the Electoral College, you have to win so many delegates from each state to form a coalition, so to speak, of people all over the country, not just in the major cities. Those are the things that the founding fathers considered. They also considered the fact that you have to limit the government. And ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know it, if you've never read the Constitution, I highly encourage you to do so. You can Google it. You can even get a pocket edition. As you can see, it's not that thick. It's very light reading. But these are the playbooks. These are the rules that everyone in the United States has to follow, as well as the states. The states can give you greater rights than what's under the federal Constitution, but they can't impose more restrictive rights than what's under the United States Constitution. And just like somebody says the CDC puts out guidelines and says, this is what we would like you to do, it's guidance. It's not a law. When an executive order comes out, it is a policy decision. It is not a law because, as you all remember from your civics lessons, a bill has to be introduced in the House and the Senate and passed, and then they reconcile it, and then it goes to the governor or the president for signature. An executive order is very limited power by the governor or even an executive order at the state level. It is that of a policy decision. And a lot of people got upset with me about me saying these orders are arbitrary and capricious. What is essential under this order, but why is this other profession not essential under the same order? It makes no sense. Is it because you had a better lobbyist? Is it because you owe favors to people in a particular industry? Why is it okay to have your food served pickup from a guy not wearing a mask who's been in contact with lots of other people not wearing a mask versus me going to a restaurant and exercising some social distancing between tables at a restaurant? And I know people are going to say, Scott, you're not a doctor, not claiming to be. The United States Constitution doesn't allow the government to take away your rights. And so if the government wants to take away your rights, it's got to be legal. If they're going to take away your property, they have to pay you for it. Case in point, in Michigan, the governor up there, and she appears to be a nice lady, Governor Gretchen Whitmer. She is now facing a lawsuit in her official capacity as the governor, challenging her orders, her edicts that she has come down with. They are alleging that she is violating their First and Fifth Amendment rights with the executive order on a ban that went too far, that actually banned travel between homes within the state. So if you were a resident of the state of Michigan and you wanted to travel to your lake house, you can't do that. But if you lived in, say, Colorado and you had a lake house, you could then travel to your lake house in Michigan. That's okay. Why is that? Well, governors can't restrict travel, ladies and gentlemen. The governor at least knew that, but she's going to restrict her own citizens, saying she can do basically whatever she wants. Other examples in the lawsuit include that basically the executive order makes little to no sense because it bars people from going to a store, but bars them from using their fishing boat. It's also noted that essential businesses where a lot of people gather can remain open while a one-man tree trimming operation has to stay home because the government says so. As it relates to the tree trimming operation, the owner states that he believes that he can operate safely. Why? Because he's outside trimming trees, normally by himself, or with a small crew exercising social distancing. The governor has also banned visits of people in the same state. And one of the plaintiffs in the state complained that he, under the governor's executive order, can't visit his girlfriend's residence, nor his friends, nor family members. And the plaintiffs are seeking a temporary injunction, just like the church sought in Kentucky, stating that the governor of Michigan is violating one's fundamental rights under both the First, the Fifth, and 14th Amendment. And they are seeking financial compensation for a regulatory taking of the physical, locational, and tangible property, and then ultimately seeking a permanent injunction against the enforcement of the government's orders. Now, you may all think, oh, Scott, why are you getting all fired up about this? Well, because a lot of people think, and some of these governors and mayors are thinking, that there are criminal ramifications that can take place because of their orders if people don't follow them. You can't restrict the people's right to travel. You can't restrict an individual's right to worship. And other people say, oh, you can worship at home. I get that. But that's not the way people want to do it, okay? And speaking from a person who last time he went to church was surprised that he wasn't struck down by a lightning bolt when he crossed that little altar to go to a friend's wedding, in the big picture, it doesn't really bother me. But as somebody who likes to protect the Constitution, who doesn't want to give up anyone's constitutional rights unless they're doing it knowingly, voluntarily, and completely of their own free volition, that's one thing. But when the government says you can't do that and they're going to make it criminal, that's when I get concerned. I know a lot of people are saying, Scott, just let it go. Just let these people do what they want. They're just doing it for the good of everybody. Well, as I've stated before, your constitutional rights are not suspended even in a pandemic. And these executive orders are exposing the little tyrants out there that they are. So when these governors or mayors think that their little edicts are the law, they actually are not. Because I will trump your executive order with the United States Constitution. At the end of the day, when the panic subsides and rational thought takes over yet again, people will look at it and say, these are overreaching, excessive, and oh, by the way, they've just ruined the economy. Some people said that this discussion is political. No, it's not. It's legal. It's constitutional rights. And people are making people's fundamental rights under the United States Constitution illegal. And we will talk about it every day when every little tyrant out there thinks with the power of being a mayor or even the governor that they can do whatever the hell they want. And just like I've said before, no one in the government wakes up in the morning and says, how do we limit our power? Nobody does that. They know what their constitutional limits are, and every day people in the government get up and try to get around their limitations. Don't be afraid of somebody that wants to make lots of money. Be afraid of people that want power. And finally on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day involves two individuals. I don't know who is actually dumber, the criminal or the victim in this particular case. But deputies at the Monroe County Sheriff's Office say that Guilford Joseph Abshire, 53, was sharing a cell with a 65-year-old man when the man got upset with him for passing gas. A few minutes later, apparently Abshire used their shared toilet, and afterwards, the victim asked Abshire to provide a courtesy flush to help with the overwhelming odor. Whereupon, Mr. Abshire thought the rational thing to do would be to start kicking the victim on the lower bunk, ultimately resulting in the man who was in there for a DUI and drug possession, suffered three broken ribs, a broken nose, and other lacerations. And of course, those all took place prior to the deputies coming into the cell and removing the victim. So, Mr. Abshire, you have been selected as our dumb criminal contestant of the day. We wish you well on these charges. I'm sure there's some logical explanation for your conduct. But I'm not sure beating an at-risk adult, a 65-year-old man, and breaking his bones is necessarily the appropriate conduct for a request to flush the toilet. I know jail slash prison has a different set of rules. I once represented a guy who stabbed another individual because, well, he was cleaning the microwave on the outside while my guy was cooking his ramen noodles, and he didn't want him cleaning it while he was there. So what's the logical thing to do? Go to your cell, stab the guy. I get it. It's a different mentality in prison. But that was just dumb. Apparently, there were only two people in the cell. Did you think he was going to say these injuries were self-inflicted? Mr. Abshire, we wish you the best of luck. Contact us. You can be a guest on our show, and you could potentially be the dumb criminal contestant of the week and receive a Crime Talk mug. Thank you for watching. Stay safe out there. Use your common sense. Wash your hands, social distance, wear a mask. But don't let anyone walk all over your constitutional rights. Have a great day. Thanks for watching Crime Talk.